Well, this hour we'll continue talking about intelligent design. It is amazing what Dr. Jeffrey Simons, his work is called Are We Here to Recreate Ourselves? And we'll take your calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back with Dr. Jeffrey Simons. Doctor, do you think the fact that we can alter ourselves with technology is an abomination or a good thing?
I think it remains to be seen. But for the most part, I think it's a good thing. I mean, I don't know sure what you mean by alter ourselves, but certainly...
genetically and yeah. With technology.
Oh, genetically. Well, genetically, I don't know if I'd call it an abomination, but I sort of call it a worry. You mean cloning, too? And
all that stuff. All that stuff.
Yeah. I my comfort level isn't there. But I don't have a decision myself for that. But genetically, I worry about it a little bit, the super race stuff. And we're certainly going down that path. And if we don't, maybe some other governments that don't have as many freedoms will go down that path. And we haven't gotten there yet, but it's coming. And, I mean, look at the Nazis did with amphetamines in World War II. I mean, the Blitzkrieg was... mostly successful because those guys didn't sleep. They were on amphetamines. It was a secret weapon that nobody else knew about. Well, I mean, we got more secret weapons coming, and I don't know.
Well, I got to tell you, tell me more about the title. Are We Here to Recreate Ourselves? Yeah. What did you mean by that?
Yeah, I think we are. The pattern is clear. We have progressed from mannequins to humanoids. And I think this is one of the purposes in life. It's the only way we're going to go out to outer space and do what we're going to do, explore it. It's not like sailing the seas that Columbus had to do or Magellan, or it's a little bit like Neil Armstrong going to the moon. But we're not going to be able, I don't think, beyond go to Jupiter, let alone further out. And we've got to recreate ourselves. I think we've got to make ourselves in our own image. I think people are not going to be as accepting of robots if they don't look like us to some degree, if not to a big degree. I mean, little kids aren't going to want to play maybe with something that looks a little less like a person than one that does. I guess that remains to be seen with certainty. But that's where we're going. It's pathetic. It's right there. It's readily visible, and my book addresses it from every perspective I can think of.
Charles Darwin died in 1882, but had you been able to talk to him and interview him, what would you have asked him?
Am I allowed to draw on modern-day science?
Sure, absolutely. You're in a time machine.
Yeah. Well, I'd ask him how the species changed from one species. I'd ask him how he explains the major flaws, the missing pieces in all the fossil records. I'd tell him about DNA and the blueprints, and I'd ask him, how do you account for blueprints? You know, it's interesting also, I point out something in my book that I've not yet found a Darwinist who can explain this, and I think it's maybe one of the arguments against them. That might be a major one, and I've not seen anybody else talk about it, but if you look at the spinal cord and the nerves that come down, you know, there's a left side and a right side.
Yeah.
And they switch, they flip. Now, there's no reason that they should flip, that the left goes to the right and the right goes to the left. There's no reason they should flip, and no one can explain why they flip sides, because there's no logical thing. Why not just the whole right side of the brain do the right side of the body? But mix in with that, one might say, well, the head spun in some way or something, I guess. But mix in with that that the nerves to the eyes, the optic nerve, from the right side, half of it goes to the left eye, to the inner part or around the nose, and half of it goes to the right eye, the outer side. And the left does just the opposite. So if the spinal cord were just to flip 180 degrees, that wouldn't happen. That couldn't happen. And then there's one other thing to mix in with this. There are some nerves that come in from the right side, and even though they might come up to the left, they may go back to the right. And so there little bit of no rhyme or reason to some of this. And I've not found anybody in all the debates that I've had and discussions I've had, and it's in my book, explain how that happened with evolution and why. And another thing is, who are you talking to when you're talking to yourself?
Exactly. Who's that little voice in your head?
Who's there? Who's listening to you? Who are you talking to? Are there two of you in there? Is it Pinocchio with Jimmy Cricket on one shoulder and whatever candlestick or whatever the name was on the other shoulder telling you what to do, or Freud's ego, super ego, and id? But there's at least some people have more than two voices, but that you're not supposed to. But who's talking to who? And who's listening to what you're saying? And, you know, the vocal cords don't move when you're thinking or talking to yourself. I mean, if you're talking out loud, your vocal cords are moving, but there's no vocal cord movement when you're talking to yourself inside your brain. And that, you know, consciousness in itself is another huge area. I have a chapter in my book on that, and I talk about it intermittently throughout the book. But what is that? And how to explain it, and how to explain the spark of life, we haven't been able to find consciousness in our studies in the brain, and we can't pin it down. We do a lot of things that are not explained very well. Creativity is something we do. We pray, it's something we do. None of that's explained by the physical.
I don't think they know how to explain it.
No, they don't. They don't. And the more we learn, the less Darwin is correct. But I do think there's something to be said for natural selection. I don't argue that. And maybe mutation, and certainly trial and error, maybe. But those are small players compared to what's really going on. And the reason Darwin is so accepted, and the opposite, God is politics.
When you made your switch, when you changed your mind on how this was all happening, did you kick yourself for believing it in the first place?
No, I don't think so.
So you didn't beat yourself up over?
No, well, I beat myself up all the time for a variety of things. So I guess that wouldn't be new. But no, I mean, I could justify why. I mean, there was a lot of logic to it. There was an awful lot of smart people, as I mentioned, who believe it's true. There's an awful lot of books that say it's true. And I had a lot of professors along the way who said, you know, that's how it happened. So even though I had some doubts, if I did, who was I to question them? It took me well into my late 30s or 40s, I think, to start saying, wait a second here. And it had nothing to do with a religious experience and that sort. And I, as I mentioned, I'm spiritual, but I'm not religious. I'm not a Bible thumper. I don't quote the Bible when I talk. And it's just the facts, ma'am, just the facts.
Huh. Okay, let's take some calls for you, and we'll do it after the break as well. First-time caller Tobias in Nampa, Idaho, with us. Hi, Tobias.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good. Good to have you with us.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking, what if the human race is kind of our own God in a way? I mean, you know how they had the old Greek gods, and I mean, we're kind of in charge of our own destiny in a way, you know? And for us to end up to be robots, I mean, where's the love? I mean, you know, robots don't know how to love, so what would that get us? I mean,
could we be the gods, Dr. Jeffrey?
No, I don't think so.
Again, it gets back to who created the God.
Yeah, who created the God? You know, the same with the Big Bang. I mean, who caused that? And who caused whatever caused that? No, I don't think we're the gods that some of us like to think we are.
My mother used to tell me, she's 92, God love her, but I would ask her when I was a kid, Mom, what's God?
Yeah.
And she said, Georgie, that's what you called me, God always was and always will be. That was her answer.
Wow.
And I kept telling her, I said, Mom, that's unacceptable to me.
Yeah.
I want an answer.
Yeah, I am kind of thing. And I was and I will be.
I mean, she's probably right, but I still want an answer.
Yeah, well, you're not going to get it. So I mean, you might as well get used to that. I mean, it's not not something you can define. You can only, it's the treasure chest on the coast. You know that somebody, something made the treasure
chest. We don't even know how life started. We really don't.
No, we don't.
I mean, my gosh, it's one of the greatest wonders of the universe.
Yeah, and I wish we were more open about discussing all the options. And it's very, very difficult to do so. And we're very polarized, and it's a shame.
Let's go to Elaine in Fort Myers, Florida. Elaine, I trust you are safe. Florida had a lot of cases today of coronavirus.
Yes. Good morning, gentlemen.
Hi.
Good morning. I just wanted to go back a little bit to where you guys were starting to talk about the monkeys and gorillas and apes and everything and how much we are so much like them. And but I, my personal belief is that there's some kind of aliens that came to the earth and seeded the monkeys and the apes and made us from them, a derivative from them. They'll never find the missing link. Of course, they're probably not gods, you know, like we were all talking about. But I really do believe that there was aliens that came and seeded the monkeys and apes and derived us from them.
You may be right on that, Elaine. Have you heard the theory of Zechariah Sitchin, Jeffrey?
No. Uh-uh.
All right. He is a longtime writer who passed away at the age of 90. But his theory was that the Anunnaki came from another planet in our solar system,
yeah,
an extra planet, and seeded what was life here on this planet. And as Elaine would say, apes and monkeys, maybe. But I think there was another level. I think there was a layer between humans and monkeys. And I think that they took that creature, whatever it might have been, and seeded it and genetically altered it. And here we are.
Yeah, I'm a fan of ancient aliens. I watch the shows all the time. And so I know what you're talking about. There's a lot of things that they find in ancient civilizations that speak to ancient aliens coming down here, but I've yet to see any evidence that they fiddled with monkeys to make people.
But again, Charles Darwin would say we evolved from the apes and monkeys.
Yeah, well, there's an awful lot of steps. When you know, people just look at a monkey and say, hey, you know, take away the hair and you know, maybe stand a little more upright and able to speak a little bit. But there's an awful lot of physiology. You know, monkeys can't speak as we do. They can't create like we do. They can't pray like we do. But they also have they have a different chin. They have a different penis. They have a different size brain compared to their body. They have chromosomes that are different. I mean, one could always say aliens were able to make these changes and change monkeys into people. They had to change a monkey into a male and a female simultaneous if they wanted a human race. So they have to make two major changes.
Well, do you think, knowing what you believe now, that the humans just came, just popped up as humans?
Well, you know, I've had people say to me, yeah, you know, when it comes to a whale, you just think God dropped it into a fishbowl like you do a goldfish, and all of a sudden we had whales kind of poking fun at me. And I don't know. I don't know. All I can say, my point only is that what we're looking at could not have happened spontaneously, could not have happened by evolution. And if one wants to believe the Bible version, you know, that's a possibility. Certainly a possibility. There's an awful lot of people who believe that.
All right, back to the calls. George in Corpus Christi, Texas. Hey, George, go ahead.
Hi, Mr.
Hey,
Norrie.
Hi there.
Hey, good to hear from you again. Two questions. First of all, is your guest, is he a monotheist? Does he believe in one supreme being?
Yes.
Yes, he does now.
Okay. And the second question is, with interdimensionals, I spoke to Tommy about that, and he said I would consider like Jesus Christ, Muhammad, all these great religious figures throughout history, human history, as interdimensionals. They would be. Remember, last time I called you, George, I was talking about the order of things. There is an order to everything.
Oh yeah, it's all. So, it's perfectly in order.
So the supreme being would be God, and in the Bible, the Christian Bible, it does say the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. So I'm saying the interdimensionals are part of all this goodness and badness. Well, they're more benevolent figures, because last time when I spoke to Mr. Serrett, there were malevolent figures.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked about the order there, too. So my question is, who had more to do with creation, and is it just one being, or are we talking about many beings? Because there's also angels, so they could be considered interdimensional,
sure,
too. In other words, I'm trying to figure out
who's responsible.
Yes, exactly. So,
all right, that's the big question: who's responsible? And let's talk a little bit about that, Jeffrey. We've been talking about it tonight, of course.
I don't know who's responsible. I mean, all I can tell you is there's clear evidence of design, that there had to be an intelligence behind it. There's clear evidence of foresight. There had to be an intelligence behind it. There are multiple purposes, and one of which, several of which we discussed tonight. I mean, I can't tell you.
Why could there only be one, though? Why couldn't there be many creators?
I suppose there could. I haven't given a whole lot of thought to many. I would venture somebody who is a strong believer in the Bible would argue against that, but I don't know. I'd have to give that some thought, George.
Yeah, it's amazing. And of course, what if we are indeed in the Matrix, as Elon Musk says? We're living in a digital universe, and
yeah,
we're created.
Yeah,
we're just there.
Yeah, we're not really real.
I just hope one day somebody doesn't hit Alt-Delete. We don't want that to happen. Where do people get your books, Jeffrey?
Amazon.com. That would be the main place to get them. And there's some old ones around too, including a medical spoof. Two medical spoofs. But Amazon.com.
And you've written a book called The Z Papers, The Atom Experiment.
Yeah, those are old news. But, yeah, The Z Papers is the one that was optioned for movies twice. And The Atom Experiment, the gentleman who bought and promoted Jaws tried to buy it, and my publisher had a contract saying if he matched the offer and added a dollar, he got it. So he got it, and I didn't end up with the guy who did Jaws, and that would have been...
That would have been cool.
That would definitely have been cool. And so, yeah, my novels are kind of old, and you know, I've been around for a while, but these three books are very current, and the medical spoofs are still around. But you think I was smoking something funny if you read that, but it's gotten some good reviews from Kirkus and other places.
I think What Darwin Didn't Know came out in 2013.
Nope. About 2008, actually.
Oh, did it? Okay, how about Billions of Missing Links?
About a year or two later.
Okay, and then the one that came out in 2019, we're talking about now, Are We Here to Recreate Ourselves? We'll come back and take final calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, I hope you have an enjoyable Independence Weekend, which starts for many of you tomorrow. And on tomorrow night's program, I'll be talking with Dan Baldwin about the paranormal pendulum, how a pendulum or dowsing can change your life, followed by those Friday night into Saturday morning open lines. Then Saturday on Independence Night, Jimmy Church mans the desk, and he'll be talking to you about all kinds of great, strange, paranormal things. And then I'll be on Sunday with emerging artists and a couple of great guests as well on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. George Norrie with you, Dr. Jeffrey Simmons. Jeffrey, before we take final calls here, let's talk a little bit about preparedness, because you have written a book about that called Common Sense and Disaster Preparedness.
Yeah.
This COVID-19 that hit us, we weren't prepared for it at all.
No.
At all. Can you prepare for something like that?
Yeah, you can certainly prepare better than we were prepared. Don't anybody buy my book. It's a few years old, and things change so quickly, and the price is too high. And you can get all that information at ready.gov, which is the FEMA site. So don't buy my book. But
that's a first, by the way.
But buy the other one, please, please. You know, no, I teach disaster preparedness. I teach a lot of classes. I teach for two cities and a county, and I've taught across the country, and I've taught trainers, and I've taught trainers to train trainers, that kind of deal. And what I noticed is that there's nothing going on teaching people about an epidemic. We teach where I live volcanoes and tsunamis and earthquakes and forest fires and maybe bioterrorism, but we don't talk about pandemics. And so with this interview coming up, I took a deep dive into what we teach, and I went on the FEMA site as well. And they've added pandemic, and they talk about COVID, but it's really brief, and they didn't have anything to teach people. Now, that said, I think if I had said to people, we're going to be teaching about the flu epidemic or pandemic, come on down, you know, we probably wouldn't have had anybody come down. But the problem is, not only are there lots of stories about what we weren't prepared for nationally, but, you know, people should have been taught to have masks already. People should have been taught to maybe have gloves, maybe. They should have known about social distancing already. The toilet paper thing is a fluke. It's a freak. I don't know why that got started, but it was a respiratory disease, and people were cleaning.
People panic all the time. You should see in the Midwest when you talk about a snowstorm coming, They empty the shelves.
Well, it happened everywhere on that, too. But the thing is, so I don't know if we would have had an audience for it, but we weren't teaching it. And so on my level, people weren't taught what to do. And I think the disease, you know, in New York and some of these cities, I mean, had nursing homes been better prepared? Across the board, had we been teaching people about this in advance, we were very derelict in this. And it's an absolute shame. I mean, not only was the government not prepared in a variety of ways, and you can hear about it all the time in the news, but China, of course, has been awful when it comes to this.
Oh, horrible.
Yeah, horrible. But we could have done a whole lot better at my level just on the streets and the homes, and we weren't. Because my people that I've taught, and I've taught probably many thousand through the years, they know what to do about an earthquake, but they, you know, I try teaching bioterrorism to some degree, but mostly we talked about smallpox and anthrax, and we talked about hand washing and masks, however. So we had some of it, but normally it's not very standardized, and so some cities don't want you to talk about it because there's liability unless it's standardized and approved. We really failed here, and it's a shame because I think we could have. I think Trump saved a lot of lives by closing our doors, but I think we could have saved a lot more had we been prepared.
Yeah, and notified a little earlier that something was going on.
Absolutely. I mean, nowadays, you see people walking around with masks, washing their hands. We should have been doing this long ago, maybe every year in the winter with flu epidemics. If you're not going to get a flu shot, then you should be doing that.
I'm not sure anything works, though. I'm not sure lockdowns work. I'm not sure masks work. This thing seems to be still kicking around and getting stronger.
Yeah, I hear you. I think that if the other person's got a mask on and you have a mask on and you're 6 feet apart, I think you have a fighting chance. If you're old like me, you don't go out in public any more than you have to. I think the people who are surviving, who are in the older age groups, are the people who are hunkered down and not in nursing homes.
They're not going out anywhere.
No, we're not going out. I mean, it really, and we do it quickly and we do it with precaution, but a lot of people got caught with their, lack of another term, with their pants down.
Well, remember that old saying, I'd rather live one day as a lion than a lifetime as a lamb.
Yeah, well, right now,
right now we're lambs.
It looks pretty good, but it shouldn't have happened this way. We should have been prepared for this, if nothing else, for a bioterrorism attack. People should have known, been taught this stuff.
Well, that's what we should have been training for.
You bet.
Because that could still happen.
I agree. And in fact, this could even be kind of one. The only saving grace.
This could be the test.
Yeah. The only saving grace is I think people are learning from this one that maybe we can handle the next one around.
Let's go to first-time caller Guy, truck driving near Indianapolis. Welcome to the program, Guy. Go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much for taking my call. Long-time listener. I listened to Art Bell years and years ago.
Oh, well, thank you for sticking with us, Guy.
My comment is the amoeba is a single-cell animal in the ocean and water. It multiplies by dividing. It's not male or female. And even the earthworm is I guess you call it unisex because they both multiply. So there was no reason, if something was working already, to change from what it's doing to a male and female. So therefore, we were created rather than it just happened, you know, a male and female. They would have both, even on the earth, everything had to happen at the same time. The trees put out the oxygen, and we put out carbon dioxide, and they both had to happen at the same time.
Yep, we take care of each other.
To survive.
Well, you know, the earthworms are, some of them are hermaphrodites, and so they have a male organ and a female organ, and they just line up opposite each other and have things happen. Amoeba do split. I don't think I'd be too crazy about splitting in half. That's not my idea of fun. And I have a section in my book talks about, is sex designed to be fun? And I think it is designed to be fun so that we reproduce. I mean, some of the animals, the animal world, maybe the monkeys are the exception, but, you know, porpoises, they interact for about 3 seconds flat or less. And so we have sex designed to be fun. And I think it's part of our makeup.
Let's go next to Joe in Monterey, California. Hey, Joe, welcome. Go ahead.
Thank you, George.
Thank you.
Two good shows, George.
They're all good, Joseph. They're all good.
Yes. Yeah. Well, controversial good, which is good. We're facing problems, and I do have some really good questions for you. I'll try to consolidate it. I would like to suggest a book called Destiny of Souls or Michael Newton's book. It talks about the intelligent design, actually, and how it's done and who's doing it and why and the whole thing. One other thing, they gain wisdom. We gain wisdom through experiences, wisdom, morality, and ethics. And what have we as a race attained in that area? A wisdom, morality, and ethics dealing with powers that we're not mature enough to handle. We see things as a game, like a video game, and we're going to treat our technology this way. Also, you don't need technology to re-engineer the human body. We could do it at a higher state of being, more enlightened. I have done this. I know people, two of my friends, they also re-engineer, change the physical body. And that's with energy, with their state of being and this power that flows through them. They know how to do it. That's knowledge. And they don't use technology. So if we start to shift over to a technical approach to understanding life, we are going to deprive ourselves of the evolution of soul. And that's a crime, actually. Basically, and you could talk to these extraterrestrials, and they'll tell you that, too. Now, what have you done to search for the answers out of the body, going beyond this world, beyond the physical universe? What have you done? Have you looked into near-death experiences? Because they come back, and they will tell you what's going on. That's experience. And they gain the wisdom, the morality, and the ethics. And that's what we need more than a technology that will usurp the experiences that we gain as soul to develop those three different things to meet the challenges of an advanced culture, of an advanced race. Thank you, George, for taking my call.
Interesting. Kind of complex there, Jeffrey. But what do you think?
I think I'm going to take a pass. Sorry. I do think near-death experiences are extremely fascinating, and I sometimes wonder if that's not part of our design, in that when we die, this is something that makes us feel a little better. I sometimes, you know, if you see animals when they die and they get bit in the neck, like a tiger biting some type of antelope or something.
It knows where to bite.
It knows where to bite. That's automatic. And the animal just kind of collapses, and I think they have a built-in endorphin response or something that it's not as painful and not as bad to them. So near-death experiences and that type of thing interest me.
I wouldn't want to trade places with it, though.
No, not at all. But it is interesting that they know where to go. They always know where to go.
Let's go to Jersey Doug. Where? He's in New Jersey, east of the Rockies. Hey, Doug, go ahead.
Thank you once again for taking my call. I do appreciate it.
Thank you.
I wanted to go back a little bit about the master design here. I definitely believe there's, without a doubt, some may call it God, some may call it our Lord, Shiva, Buddha. I'm just going to go ahead and say a higher power. For some reason, no matter how you look around you, if you don't see it, it worries me. I mean, everything from a tree that starts off with a sapling, dies in the fall, comes back in the spring, grows another couple of feet in the winter. It does this for maybe 300 years unless someone comes along and cuts it down. How animals, there's a bird, I believe it's called the cuckoo bird. What this bird does is he follows around the migration of other birds like robins and blue jays and things like that, sparrows, whatever, and he waits for them to nest and lay eggs.
Right.
He will go when the male and female are away from the nest, he will go and kick out an egg or two and lay an egg in its place and take off. Now, the baby is hatched and fed by these other birds, and when it grows up, it'll do the same thing. Now, how is that imprinted on it if there was never a mother parent there to show it to do this, to not bother building its own nest or taking care of its own young and getting away with another bird to do this? But yet, when it leaves that, it doesn't relate itself to the sparrow or the blue jay or whatever. It goes and relates itself back to its original type of bird that it is, and that's the one they mate with, and they go through the process again.
Does the animal kingdom, Jeffrey, change any of this thought pattern of intelligent design?
No.
I think it enhances it, doesn't it?
No, I think it supports it entirely. I mean, the kangaroo, you know, when its Joey is born, it climbs into the pouch.
And it knows how to do that.
It knows how to do that, knows how to find the nipple and latch on. Yeah, the equivalent of that crawling would be a baby first born crawling across a football field, the length, the 100 yards. I mean, that's the equivalent when it comes to sizes. No, it enhances the theory entirely.
What would you say, of everything you've studied, is the most incredible evidence of intelligent design?
Well, I kind of went into that a little while ago, and I know it seemed a little complicated, but it has to do with the nerves and how they switch sides when there's no reason.
Yeah, you're talking about the spinal cord. Right.
Also, there's another thing, too, is there's a period of time where the brain is forming in the uterus where 250,000 nerve cells migrate, and they all know where to go, and they, you know, they climb, they go, they slide, they do a whole host of maneuvers to get to an exact place, and then they know how to hook up with all the nerves that are around them. They talk about, you know, the Joey finding a nipple. This is hundreds of thousands, if not millions, and we have about 35 trillion cells in our brains, and they all know where to go, what to do, when to do it, and how to do it together. I mean, this would take a lot longer than the life of the Earth or the or our solar system or the.
But it does make you wonder, doesn't it, Jeffrey? Keep in touch with us, okay?
Listen, I thought this was great fun. Thank you very much.
Good job, Dr. Jeffrey Simmons. The book is called "Are We Here to Recreate Ourselves?" Don't forget to join us starting tomorrow night for our live Independence Week of programs for you. You're going to love them all, so stick with us on Coast to Coast AM. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasur, Greg Bishop, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, Tim Banal, George Knapp, and Ian Punnett, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everybody.